Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Johnson on Radio Edutalk. I'm joined, of course, with David Noble. We have got no guests tonight, so I think we'll just have a wee chat amongst ourselves. If you want to join in, you can tweet at Edutalker or hashtag Edutalk or email edutalkr@hotmail.co.uk. And if you'd like to just join in and talk, you could probably DM me a Skype username and we'll try and fill you in. Okay, so this is us, David. I'm just going to be checking a couple of things if you want to lead into the MOOCs.
Yeah, no bother, John. Yeah, it's just been a... Like many teachers in Scotland, just been enjoying a week or two off on holiday. And I've been doing a bit of reading or a bit of looking around the web as usual. And just quite interested in hearing, I suppose, as somebody who's been involved in studying through a MOOC yourself, John, you know, just revisiting the whole notion of the massive open online course idea. It's popped up in a couple of conferences that I've been at recently, and I know that some institutions in Scotland have started to look around the idea of MOOCs, although I suppose at this point it's important to, I think in a moment, John, I'll probably ask you for a simple definition of what a MOOC is, as much for my benefit as maybe some listeners. I know, for example, the University of Edinburgh have been looking into the idea of running a couple of MOOCs in the new year, and I know that you know, these are various different topics, and as I alluded to a moment ago, you know, I don't believe that they're actually referring to them as MOOCs. I suppose a bit like other social media or new media terminology like wikis and things like that. It's not intuitive, as you know, as to what it actually is. But I know that there's some interesting developments at University of Edinburgh. In fact, there's a couple of their online courses. I'm looking at maybe getting one or two of my older pupils just to try out. A couple have actually volunteered to do so. I suppose that kind of ties in with the nature, so to speak, of MOOCs, and that they're not necessarily certificated, that there's not usually any kind of entry requirement, and therefore, as I say, I'm hopeful that a couple of my pupils will follow up on an early commitment that they've made to try out one or two of these ones that the University of Edinburgh are going to be running into the new year. So it'd just be interesting just to have a little bit of a chat around what's happening out there. And I suppose for me, I wouldn't mind spending some time tonight kind of thinking aloud about how this might play out for the professional learning of teachers, I suppose, particularly in Scotland. It's something I've been interested in for a while, since I wrote a paper for the Scottish Government's Technologies for Learning strategy a couple of years ago, looking into how you can get excellent CPD or professional learning available online, where people can volunteer to take forward that learning to whatever degree, you know, whether that's, you know, just awareness raising around something right through to master's level credit, which is a term that we might hear more often in the coming weeks in Scottish education. So I suppose just to start off, John, would it give us a wee idea about you know, what a MOOC is, or
right,
might be referred to differently elsewhere, and also a bit more about your kind of experiences so far. And just a final point is, I'm particularly interested because without naming conferences or what have you, I know other people have picked up on this as well. There still seems to be the case that people are talking about MOOCs in formal settings, maybe conference presentations, panel discussions, and it seems to be the case that some of these people who are talking at length around the theory of it, or, you know, how it may work out in practice, that many actually don't have any or have very little first-hand experience of actually participating in a MOOC as a learner.
Yeah, and it's getting quite interesting just all over the place now, looking at at MOOCs because there's differences appearing and all the rest of it. The first thing is probably this stands for Massive Open Online Course, the idea being that they can have huge numbers of people in them, that they're open to anybody to participate in. And I think the idea was started, and the first few MOOCs were run by constructivists, Stephen Downes and George Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Is that constructivists? Yeah. Is that the right?
There's connectivism.
Connectivism, yeah. Who ran these courses? And since then, there seems to be a variety of offshoots, some of which have been more commercial or run by universities and all the rest of it. And I think some people now refer to the constructivist MOOCs as CMOOCs, and the ones that have been run by the university, I think particularly maybe MIT, I can probably get a reference for that in the middle in a minute, as ex-MOOCs. And the ex-MOOCs seem slightly more formal, slightly more organised. The CMOOCs, the participation is very much distributed, which I think is really interesting. You join in and various bits of information are pulled together. Partially, I think, with the ones that Stephen Downes has been involved in an online application he's designed called RSS Hopper, like Grasshopper, RSS Hopper, which pulls together RSS feeds so they can connect different people's blogs that can pull in input. And to a certain extent, the two sort of MOOCs I've been in aren't quite MOOCs. There's DS106, which is open again course digital storytelling in the University of Mary Washington, kicked off I think by Jim Groom, and now I think Jim's not been teaching this session, but Alan Levine, who runs a very popular education blog, CogDog blog. And to some extent, they slightly distance themselves, I think, from the MOOCs, but there's huge numbers of parallels. And I also participated in a not massive open online course, which was organised in Scotland by Colin Maxwell, and it was on digital creativity for educational professionals. And it really was, I think, pointing the way to the things you're thinking about is CPD. It was a very useful, I think, CPD activity from the people who took a part, who came generally from education, but some tertiary and some primary and secondary.
John, can you say a bit more about how Colin's un-MOOC or not MOOC, how that actually worked then in terms of the approaches, you know, the kind of texts that were used and, you know, any kind of assessment or collaboration that was required within it?
Right. There was no assessment, and I think that's common in the CMOOCs, that there isn't assessment, there isn't awards. I think some of the ex-MOOCs are attempting to figure out ways of assessing students. And just, this is veering off, but I was just reading earlier today about one model that the Coursera people who run a MOOC or a MOOC like one of the ex-MOOCs, and they're talking about developing a sort of framework for peer moderation and assessment. It's obviously, if you're leading one of these courses, and the ex-MOOCs are definitely sort of led, and there's lectures delivered and things to be done. Obviously, because of the numbers of participants, it would be really hard for the professionals involved in leading it to do the awarding or the grading. So their idea is to bring in sort of peer assessment and in some way formalise it. I haven't followed that up. But Colin's idea was, is he just put up a series of challenges, which were very open-ended, nearly always to do with using online tools that would be useful in education, and folks just took part. And Colin didn't go down the constructing a website or anything else. He had a blog where the challenges were published, but he actually used a Facebook group to let people discuss what they've done. The idea was that if you took up one of the challenges, if you created some digital artifact, which could be a movie or a diagram or all sorts of things, and you would blog about it, and he just used the Facebook group to aggregate the blogs and for people to chat about the other people's work. So there wasn't any formal grade, there was no pressure to keep up or do things. That, I think, is in the spirit, maybe, of the original MOOCs. But the CMOOCs, that people could drop in and out, they could take as much as they want. The DS106 one's particularly interesting, I think, because they've got two sorts of participants. There's folk who are studying at the University of Mary Washington, taking a course, DS106, and these people are assessed on what they'll do. They've got a certain number of things to do, but anybody else can drop in and out of the course, take part, and they very much encourage peer discussion, leaving comments on participants' blogs. They work very much off a blog structure, so every participant has got their own blog, or the ones who don't at the start, who are in the college course, are actually part of the course, is setting up their own domain, taking control of that. But these are then sort of pulled together so that you can see everybody else in the course, that they're aggregated through RSS and published on the main blog in a very slick and interesting, at least to me, way of using the technology.
I'm just wondering, John, though, that, you know, it appears to me that it kind of presupposes a level of competence or knowledge around about social media, and I'm just wondering if this is kind of particular to the MOOCs that you've been involved in that have kind of been around digital media in particular. But, you know, I'm looking at, and it was interesting you mentioned Coursera there, because that's one of the kind of big sites or Coursera consortium that a lot of people are having an experience of a MOOC through, and in fact it's Coursera that the MOOCs at Edinburgh University are organised through. But, you know, I'm looking at the I should have pulled this up earlier, but, you know, the subjects that anybody can study at the start of 2013 through the Edinburgh Coursera MOOCs are Introduction to Astrobiology and Search for Extraterrestrial Life, Critical Thinking, Global Challenges, Equine Nutrition, Introduction to Philosophy, you know, very diverse courses there. But I'm just wondering whether, I suppose a big play in the marketing around the Coursera MOOCs, for example, are that, anybody can sign up to take part, and they can, as you've alluded to, you know, there's different levels of involvement. Although none of these particular ones are officially certified, although they are at roughly university entry level, but a big play is made of the fact that it is technically open to anybody who has some, you know, a web connection and can access the content and maybe the activities and maybe the ability to interact in some way. But it almost goes against the grain to take the collaboration to such a degree where it requires you to have knowledge and competency around some of these social media tools.
Sure. I mean, I think one of the things is in DS106, the first 2 weeks, it's a 12-week university course in America, the first 2 weeks are actually taking people through setting up blogs, Flickr accounts, Twitter accounts, and that's part of the course. So they're bringing people in. Obviously, I would imagine most of the open online people that are joining into that particular course are already using blogs and things like that and are quite comfortable. But the students, and this was quite surprising to me, that the fact that quite a lot of the young people, although they were maybe aware of Facebook, they didn't have a Twitter account, you know, they weren't used to these things. And some of them, I think, find it quite challenging because they are doing quite technical things. Some of the sort of ideas behind DS106 are to do with ownership and things like that. I mean, there's a professor, Gardner Campbell, there, who very much seems to think that people should own their own and control their own digital production. So you shouldn't rely on, say, Facebook or services. You should be sort of in control of your own data. And the first part of the course actually takes the students through that. But I guess it depends what kind of course you're doing. If that's maybe not so appropriate, if you were, you know, studying astrophysics, why should you need to know how to set up a blog or whatever?
I'm assuming, John, that there is no face-to-face element to any of these, or you know, any kind of live events. I'm just trying to think. I would imagine that you could have live events that a small number of people who are taking part in the course would possibly be able to consider attending, but would be streamed or recorded for everybody else. Have you come across that at all, or does it entirely rely on the kind of tools that we've come to know and love online?
I think that's the trouble with these MOOCs, is they're hard to get a grip of because different ones are doing different things. So the DS106, for the students in the university, they have classes. They have a weekly class to go to. They've also expected to either watch a video live or the recording or join in at one of these Google... what do you call the Google Talk things? Is it just Google Talk? You know, where you can join in and have a sort of multicast video conference.
Mm-hmm.
I think the CMOOCs had timed broadcasts that kick things off, and I know that a lot of the ex-MOOCs, one of the sort of criticisms I've seen of them is that they're just really putting the massive lecture online, so that there is a video experience or a listening experience, but it's not interactive, it's not two-way.
Is that a common complaint, John, that you've picked up on your kind of reading around MOOCs? I mean, those would be interesting, you know, what people are saying in terms of... I mean, to me it feels as if folk that are really passionate about the possibilities of MOOCs and likewise are seem to be wrestling with a lot of the kind of major issues that have cropped up or the anecdotes that you would expect to hear around, you know, we really like this idea, but actually in practice there are so many problems or so many things that get in the way of kind of powerful learning. So what have you heard, positive and negative? What are the kind of key messages that are coming out just now?
Well, again, I think there's a split between the different... There seems to be some criticism of the ex-MOOCs by the CMOOC people, who I imagine feel a bit upset that somebody's taken their idea and in some cases seems to be trying to make money out of it, when the original ones were open in almost every way, I understand. They weren't, you know, they're not a commercial model at all. I'm not sure how the ex-MOOCs that plan to make money, what their plan is. It does seem to be all sorts of things kicking off in all different ways, but one of the sort of criticisms I've seen a few places of the ex-MOOCs at least is that they're basically just taking a lecture model and putting it online. So there's not much difference. You watch a lecture on your computer, you do your assignments, that's it. There is, I think, discussion boards, but you maybe don't, I've not taken one, so I don't know, but you maybe don't get the same sort of rich discussion that the connectivists are looking for, because they've got lots of channels for people to talk. And again, you know, they're relying on people publishing stuff themselves, watching and commenting on other people. And DS106 is probably even more, as Collins is, you're very much encouraged to talk. And DS106, like Collins, is assignment and project driven. But one of the really interesting things about DS106 is that the assignments are largely created by the students. So there's a huge bank of assignments, which are teaching you to use various digital tools, making pictures, making audio, making video, in all sorts of ways. But you're encouraged to, I think it's actually, if you're doing it for credit at the university, you've got to produce an assignment. And you're also encouraged to, when somebody produces an assignment, to produce a tutorial for that. And these are all pulled together by the participants tagging their blog posts with this material in different ways. So if you look at an assignment, you say to do a tutorial, you tag it in a particular way, and a link to that then automatically appears on the assignment. And if you do the assignment, you tag it in a different way, and the people who have completed assignments are linked in the same way. And I think there's this very sort of encouraging for students to get involved in the design of the course.
Where did you kind of see the balance here between the extent to which there was student involvement or interaction among the organiser and the learners around the kind of around the pre-organisation of the course? You know, to what extent was there activity around that compared to collaboration or communication, working together, whatever, around the actual assignments? And then again, how did the amount of time, to what extent was time given to sharing and having dialogue around the actual artefacts that were produced? Because you're talking about this kind of strong expectation that there's some kind of dialogue or interfacing between the participants. But I'm just wondering, as I say, where the balance lay between the extent of that pre-course, during the course, and then actually, peer assessment or whatever you want to call it, towards the end of the course. Because my assumption would be that where you're getting people from such a diverse geographic and professional backgrounds, etc., that it would be quite difficult to... It seems that the MOOC assumes that there will be a desire for social interaction, but people are very busy, and as I always keep coming back to, people are online for vast amounts of the day anyway, just getting by with, you know, their personal lives and administrative tasks and such like. I would be intrinsically sceptical about the amount of time that folk would give to any one of those three types of activities within the kind of phase of learning through a MOOC.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think if you're taking the course for credit university, that's part of the assessment. So it's a given that you will create an assignment, you will do tutorials on all the rest of it. And I think the other thing is that, as I said, around DS106, which is maybe not as massive as some of the other courses, there's a great deal of enthusiasm being generated, to a large extent, especially if you're open online like I have been. You're maybe not doing the hard stuff, the analysis of film or something like this. You're just doing fun things, and there's a great deal of encouragement. The people who are organising the course really work their socks off to create comment, get discussion going, distributed across Twitter, Flickr, participants' blogs, and they've really, I'm just amazingly impressed how much of energy they put into that. But also, you're kind of very impressed by what some of the open and online people give when they're creating things or putting ideas forward or giving examples. They've got a huge bank of energy and goodwill running it. So I think it makes it a slightly special case. And I'm also seeing, you know, you can see the tension from the people running the course, and obviously for students, because they've got other courses to do, and they, you know, they obviously don't want to spend, if you're getting a part of your degree, you want to spend a proportionate amount of time on that. So you can see the instructors trying to alter the course to make people spend more time writing comments or saying, well, okay, you know, so you've done this assignment and you've blogged your result, but what we're looking for is a depth of thought behind it, or reflection, and that'll make you succeed to a greater degree. So it's quite interesting seeing these sorts of things bubble up. I don't know whether constructivist MOOCs, because there's no, you know, there doesn't seem to be people taking them, as far as I know, for credit in the university courses. I know the dropout rate of these things is huge, but I'm not sure, you know, how important that is. I couldn't say how the organisers would feel about that.
And you were saying, me, it's interesting that as somebody that doesn't use Facebook a lot, you were saying that Colin had built that into his MOOC. How do you think that works?
Well, I was surprised how well it did work. I've got a Facebook account, but I understand almost nothing about it, and I'm not particularly fond of Facebook. It always seems very fussy and complicated. Not as nice and simple like a blog or Twitter. And also, I'm not desperate about the data being locked in by a particular organisation. But it really worked very well. I think there was maybe between 12 and 20 people involved in the course. So you could follow all the conversations in one place. And the Facebook thing worked really well. People could add links, put comments in there, and I think it made the course, especially as most people knew how to work Facebook, it made it very easy to get involved and work on it, because you didn't have to learn how to do very much. You maybe had to learn something to do the assignments, but the actual, you know, it's like using a pen and paper, for most people now. Facebook is, I think, you know.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, John, that I've been at a couple of very interesting conferences in the last few weeks, and there's two things stuck out for me. It was around one of the conferences. I was emailing somebody that I just got to know in the lead up, and we were trying to organise a time to meet up and online, and this person said, that time doesn't suit. It was noticeably late one evening, and the person said, "No, I'll actually be in a physics lecture with my tutor in Greece or something like that." This was somebody who's a UK based educator, and then I was talking to, I won't name names, but an English based gentleman who we both know very well, who had said that he'd been involved in an Adobe event the night before. It was one of their global education events, seminar, what have you, around a particular tool, just focusing on teaching people about a particular tool. And I think they'd been using Adobe Connect, which those of us who use Glow or Glow TV will be familiar with. Seems to work very well. And the numbers that he was quoting me as to participants was, and that from all around the world, was just phenomenal. He delivered it from his office in England, and he was saying that there were senior students in Bulgaria that had just been told by their teacher or their tutor that this opportunity had arisen and that they should all get online. We were checking the logs, you know, there's dozens of people from Bulgaria that taking part in this, alongside folk from Scotland and I think dozens of countries from around the world. So this must be taken off, and you know, as somebody who works in a traditional education setting, I will be aware of all the fantastic opportunities that are out there and the new ways that the education has been done, so to speak. But it also got me thinking in relation to MOOCs that possibly they're over-designed, or there's always a risk that they'll be over-designed through somebody or a collection of tutors or whatever, through their vision. And they'll construct a course and the tools that will be necessary or that will be optional around it, that possibly there's just too much and that there's something to be said about a kind of stripped-down interaction, whether that is the one-off events that Adobe are running where you can take them all as a suite of experiences, or you can just dip into one or two, you know, through to the person who can just attend a lecture like my colleague did with this physics lecture, where it sounds as if it's maybe one form of interaction, maybe a couple of different texts, a bit of the traditional model, but that's it. It's possibly packaged up as something that will fit within a learning management tool, but it's not wrapped up in the language of the MOOC.
Yeah, I think that what's quite exciting at the moment is that it's like the Wild West out there. There's all sorts of things going on. And maybe because the more commercial ones are coming in, there's a lot of attention and the various tensions come out there. So it's quite a good time to be looking at things and thinking about them. And going back to other things, I mean, there's lots of online learning resources where you can just go to YouTube and watch something. So there's a whole selection of involvement, you know, from very passive, choose the bit you want. Online, I mean, Google's a learning environment, I suppose. And I believe Google have developed their own course creator, something called I don't know what it's called, Google Course Builder software, and I know a few people have been taking the Power Searching with Google, which is a class, sort of example class for that. I've not looked at that one myself. There's courses like Code Academies, one where you work through a series of online activities to learn a programming language, and you know, there's points and you get badges and bits and pieces, and there's the open badges that we've been hearing quite a lot about from Doug Belshaw, which again seem really interesting, but maybe a slightly other way to go. And
have there been any examples, John, you've come across where the badges idea and the MOOC idea have come together, or is there too much assessment in there?
I think that's probably coming, and it might already be there. Certainly, after I got your message this morning that we're maybe talking MOOCs today, it suddenly reminded me that I was thinking of signing up for the mechanical MOOC, which I did this morning, and I suspect badges might be involved in this particular course, and it's the reason seemingly these guys are it's part of the peer to peer university, which I think is Mozilla behind that. And it's to teach an introduction. It's what's called a gentle introduction to the Python programming language. And it's mechanical because they're avoiding any lectures or, you know, involvement from instructors, really. It all works by taking different bits and pieces. And what they've done is they've pulled together resources from Code Academy, from video lectures, which are provided by some university, I think, and are available on iTunes U, which I suppose is another MOOC-like being. The course is on iTunes U now. And a book which is freely available online, which I can't remember the name of, but you can download it as HTML or a big PDF. And week by week, there's a series of tasks to do, and some of them will be watching a lecture, some of them will be reading, and some of them will be these practical Code Academy classes. And I believe that you're put into groups where you can join in discussions and things. I think because I was maybe a couple of days late joining in, I haven't had an email about whether I'm in a group or not, or maybe I ticked the wrong button as I was signing up, but I'm going to be investigating that. But what struck me was that this is a MOOC and they're trying to teach people things, but their purpose for doing it is to learn about how MOOCs work. So there's lots of recursion going on in there. Yeah,
I suppose that's just, there's a recognition there. That's where we're at the moment. It's still very early days, and maybe it'd be nice for us all just to have a brief but successful experience of MOOCs before we start to think really seriously about where we can take it. Where do you see? I know that by a lot of kind of technology reports, they do that kind of gazing into the future, you know, maybe 1, 3, or 5 years. So taking that as your cue, John, you know, where do you see all this going? And, you know, do you think it's something that we should be thinking about for professional learning, and indeed do you think it's an approach that, unless the exam bodies get to grips with it, could actually be a threat in terms of the credentialising of young people who are moving into the workplace and into universities?
There's a couple of interesting things there. I think the CPD, especially the sort of self-driven CPD, obviously these things are already there, and quite a lot of them, because they came out of educational institutes, are, I think especially the CMOOCs, seem to be about education, or there was a big one on online education. Maybe that was it, the Change 11 MOOC. I might be completely wrong there, because there's so much of this information out there. So it's already out there for the adventurous or the digitally less illiterate to already jump into. I think it's also, there's maybe a really, if education keeps maybe going the way we seem to be pushed with personalisation and choice, with maybe children following interests which can't be addressed by their local teacher, maybe it's possible. I mean, I know my daughter, when she was doing her advanced hires, they didn't have anybody to do 2 of the advanced hires in her school because of numbers, so she went to other schools. And if the schools have had good video conferencing and people skilled in using that, that could have been much better than Glasgow City Council paying for taxi fares. And I think probably a lot of work could be done that didn't need to be synchronous, you know, didn't need to be at the same time. She could be set tasks online and complete them. But you know yourself, we know very well, it's easy to distribute audio now. And so she was learning languages. You think there must be room there for somebody to teach a disparate set of children in different places with a mixture of video conferencing, email and written assignments, audio assignments. So I say if we go this personalization choice direction, that would seem like an opportunity. And maybe as well the idea that a teacher doesn't need to actually know everything that the child's learning. Maybe then somebody else knows and they can support them in accessing materials rather than giving them materials. And maybe a MOOC-like beast would work okay in secondary education.
Yeah. John, I suppose we're coming in the last 5 minutes or so of tonight's impromptu show. We'll just see if anybody's listening to the live stream then. You just include the hashtag edutalk with any comments, and you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. John, if you'll indulge me for a moment, I'm going to go to this Technologies for Career Long CPD paper that I wrote a couple of years ago. I made some recommendations at the end of the paper, and I'll just go through a few of them and see a few that I think might be relevant here, and see what you think. I mean, among the recommendations is talking about, you know, the forming of professional learning communities, and I just wonder whether instead of looking at professional learning communities just within your place of work or cluster of workplaces or associated workplaces or those that are geographically close, whether we could, you know, use the MOOC idea to actually pull professionals together. And you might want to comment about certain places on the web where that might already be happening. I'll drop in a few here, John, and then come in. Also thinking about the fact that the likes of the North training on the use of ICT, I mean, that was almost feels like a generation ago, and there was a high rate of non-completion in that. And that if I would imagine that if anything was done, I'll say at this point, you know, we've got the National Partnership Group report is going to be published in the next few weeks, and that's a report that takes forward the recommendations of Graham Donaldson and his publication Teaching Scotland's Future from a couple of years ago. So that comes into play shortly as well. But and Donaldson spoke a lot about using online tools to improve the professional learning of teachers in Scotland. But I'm thinking about, you know, that face-to-face North training in ICT, which I admittedly experienced down south, not in Scotland, but, you know, the papers that came out reviewing that policy spoke about high rate of non-completion, and I would imagine that that would be the same should large chunks of professional learning, say, mandatory or statutory related learning, was to take place for teachers through a MOOC at it. There's so many reasons why there would also be a non-completion rate or even the inability of some teachers to access such learning materials, even though it would technically be kind of any time, anywhere, as you said earlier, asynchronous learning. Just a couple other points as well, John. I think there'd still be a bit of anxiety also among the teaching profession if it was seen as just an easy and convenient, or told it would be easy, convenient, and low cost, you know, to bring these kind of opportunities for professional learning through the likes of a MOOC. And also, I suppose, a kind of final point just now would be that you'd need to have some kind of quality control, or would it just be the case that for teachers who are GTC registered, for it to be formal CPD or professional learning that would actually count, for example, towards, you know, you updating your registration as a teacher, not necessarily, it's too easy a decode to me, but, you know, that you spoke earlier about the kind of self-directed learning. I mean, I've always argued about, you know, whether that is actually CPD or not, where Scottish teachers are contracted for at least 35 hours CPD a year, and that, you know, that's going to relate to PRD meetings, it's going to relate to school and local authority improvement plans. So if it's going to be that contractual CPD or professional learning, then the quality is going to have to be assured, as well as issues around access.
I think a couple of things maybe just come to mind. Is Pedigoo, the sort of online community that's developing in Scotland about people interested with the Curriculum for Excellence, is that already a online community of people doing CPD? That's not to say that everybody's joined in Scotland. It's a group of people. Getting everybody signed up and taking part in surely any CPD activity is really quite difficult, because folk haven't got time. If there's any follow-up, it gets put to the bottom of the list. A big pile of jotters to mark for an hour, or I could do some reading to follow up, that's CPD, or from some prep to do. I think the CPD quite often disappears or is not carried out. So even for face-to-face, I think that'd be difficult, or doing professional reading. I had no idea what the answer to this is, other than maybe to make the courses such good fun that people really enjoy them and follow them up. But I mean, I'm now in the business of providing CPD, and I've not cracked that. Well, long shot. There seems to be an awful lot of demands on teachers. Did you ever do any, when you were looking into this sort of more formally, look at how other professions dealt with CPD and how that worked compared to teachers?
No, I never did, John, but I'm always fascinated by the nursing profession's approaches to CPD, and I think that would be where I would be interested in looking to see whether they've taken this up to any extent. I think many of their channels and resources are quite formal. There'd be obvious reasons for that. But no, that would be, I think that'd be quite interesting to look into. I mean, I'm also thinking about, I've written before about, we need to look into the ways that we're talking online. And my final question, John, would be whether you are seeing changes in the way that people are talking, interacting, engaging in dialogue online, not necessarily compared to face-to-face, but actually compared to the way we spoke to each other online previously. Do you see any changes? my argument has been for some time that it's something we really need to think about. It's something we need to research more. It's something we need to talk a bit more, is about how we actually go about, whether that's grand stuff like constructing new knowledge while we're online, taking part in these courses, or just the way that we actually address each other, or actually even in terms of the organisation, for example, a MOOC, how we best get across the key points, or whether that's etiquette, or whether that's just the basic administration of a course. And maybe that ties in with your comment about, you know, actually to get traction here, it fundamentally needs to be fun. So have you come across ways that things have maybe in a convoluted or contrived way have been made fun and have actually worked?
I can only say that the ones I've done, the MOOCs, or non-MOOCs or whatever they are, DSA 106 and the Colin Maxwell's, have been immense fun for me. They've both been very relaxed in the way that you take part as an open online person. I think the idea of how we talk to each other online is really important. We're starting to think about digital literacy, and the way people talk online obviously is very different, and I don't know if there's been a whole shift or people go through a kind of change in themselves as they get more used to online. You know, they get better at avoiding flame wars and the likes and getting too upset about online comments. But I think it is a really challenging thing to do in some circumstances. And I think mostly I've been in very friendly, comfortable communities where there is debate and agreement rather than argument, and people are fairly forgiving if you pick somebody else up wrong. But you do see examples all the time online of people misjudging these things. And it's maybe something we've got to address in the classroom, never mind for professional judgment, is the differences between, we teach children how to debate, or we'll teach them how to talk persuasively. So which of these transfer across? How does online politeness differ from offline? I know I've made a few big mistakes, fortunately mostly via email rather than on the public web, but where I've just taken something the wrong way and got either upset or, you know, annoyed when I shouldn't have, and that's led to my behaviour changing. And just, I suppose, the way children learn how to socialise offline, we've got to do it online as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think we'll maybe call it an evening, John. That's been really absolutely fascinating talking about it. It's something that I know you're very passionate about, and you're doing a lot of reading and experimenting around as well. But I'm very much up for trying something out in the coming months. As I say, once we see what the government and other stakeholders in Scottish education are thinking about, I come from the position that I think that using ICT, social web, etc., you know, they can be used in ways to create very powerful and excellent professional learning opportunities. And I like the idea, very comfortable with the idea that you leave it up to the professional educator to decide whether they go for credit or not. It's certainly something that I'm kind of starting to speak to people and starting to think through myself about. You know, what can we actually try and pull together, just try out, but in a way that it is experimental, but it's serious enough in the first instance that the quality is absolutely there, and that people do get something out of it or get whatever they want to get out of it. Even though at the end of the day we are kind of trying this kind of thing out for the first time, and no, we've seen that there's obviously Scottish universities, and there'll be private organisations and other institutions that will also be looking into this as well, because the reality is that most types of professional learning, as we move forward, is going to have some kind of online component, and people are going to be looking to get as great coverage and buy-in as possible. I think it's fascinating. Again, it's too simple a contrast, but we hear a lot of people talking about the mandatory learning and about whether that can be delivered better, right through to you know, where there's a kind of niche professional learning around particular areas of somebody's practice, or whether it's action research and things like that, more kind of deeper learning and how MOOCs might assist with that. So, you know, whether people that you and I know get involved in this kind of thing or not, I think that there'll be various opportunities which will arise in the coming months as a result of this kind of new focus on career long professional learning, as it's being termed. So, conversation tonight's been fascinating, John, and it's Yeah. And it's definitely something that we'll be continuing to revisit in the coming months, no doubt.
Yeah, I think when we know a bit more about it, and there's an awful lot to know, this one could be revisited. It'd be certainly interesting at some point to get somebody with a deeper background and MOOCs in for a wee chat on Edutalk.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to finish up tonight, John, I'll just give listeners a bit of background to or about what's coming up later on this month. Well, first of all, at edutalk.cc on Friday, we'll have recordings from two presentations at the social pedagogy event that's taking place at Camp Hill Rudolf Steiner School in Aberdeenshire at the tail end of this week, and I'll try and pull up those the titles of those presentations in a moment, if you'd bear with me. But also, we've got next Wednesday at 7 p.m. British Summer Time, we've got Katrina Oates, formerly of Education Scotland, who is going to be joining us to talk about her master's dissertation. She has now achieved her master's qualification, and her dissertation, her studies were on learning rounds in Scottish education. So Katrina's going to be taking us through the kind of key points, key findings of her dissertation, of her research, as well as giving us more insight into how learning rounds are operating within Scottish schools. And we've also got 2 weeks tonight, that's the 31st of October, we have been joined by a good friend of yours and mine, Joe Dale. Joe is based in Nailabait, and he's a modern foreign languages and technology consultant, if listeners don't know that already, and he's going to be talking about using ICT to support classroom practice and the professional learning of modern foreign languages teachers. So a couple of fantastic shows lined up. And if you go to Radio Edutalk page at edutalk.cc, you'll find out about other talks that are coming up, or other shows as we approach Christmas.
Sounds good.
And so from Friday, that's this coming Friday, should have the following presentations available from this social pedagogy event up in Aberdeenshire. We've got Outcomes That Matter from Chris Walter and Manuela Costa, and we'll have Terry Harrison's session on Nature Nurture. So that should be fascinating. And those pieces of audio, as I say, will be at edutalk.cc sometime on Friday.
Right. So I think we'll just wrap this up and hang it up now, David. I'll hang up the broadcast. So we'll just say good night to anybody that's listening. Listen again. Looks like some great stuff coming up. Good night, folks.